we have in Parshas Miketz, but we have to be Yotzei Chanukah because Miketz always falls down on Chanukah. You got to get the Chanukah board.
All of Miketz is about Chanukah.
Yeah, the whole thing is according to Rev Wolfson, right? According to Rev Moshe Wolfson.
He wrote a sefer
called Emunas Yitecha. It's unbelievable.
You know what's called?
It attacks everything in Chanukah.
No, what's called the Vayanas Vayetze Achuta.
Yeah.
Hanes Yatza Achuta.
It's hilarious. Okay, to be Yotzei Chanukah, Rav Tanchum is two vorts. It's a famous Gemara in Shabbos and Chof Beis. Rav Tanchum says two vorts. Number one, a ner above 20 amos is possible. If you put a ner, a candle above 20 amos, it's going to be possible. And also a bor reik in bomayim. Right? We all know the pit was empty. There's no water. Yeah, if the pit was empty, obviously there's no water. Why does it have to say in bomayim? Because nechashim rekrab, and there were snakes and scorpions inside there. So the pshat is, what's the connection between the two, and why put the two together? The juxtaposition. If I was an article safer, I would say, what is the juxtaposition? So the answer is he's embarrassed. He doesn't want anyone to see what he's doing. I mean, if he's putting it above 20 amos, the reason why he's doing it is because he's embarrassed. He doesn't want anyone to see, and he's putting it so far up so that only the people who are like really looking for it can find it. But otherwise, it's like the guy who has that tiny kippah that's like so small that you can barely see it. It's there, but only if you search under like that piece of hair. You know, they're like, oh, just pull it out. There it is. It's all there. I don't want to make fun of any schools, but yeah, you get the basic idea. That's an Amah Aretz. It's a boor. A boor is known as that way. He's a boor. He's a pit, but it's known as a boor. A boor is an Amah Aretz in the Gemara's term. That he's somebody who doesn't have anything inside him. And thus, they think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do anything good for them, so why should they do anything back for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? They feel like they're rake, that they have nothing within them, that they got nothing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But really, the pshat is Ein Bo Mayim. And they're not just rake, it's Ein Bo Mayim. That because they have no Torah, they don't understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu really did for you. They don't see the chashivas of Torah, they don't understand what Torah is. They don't realize the gift that they got. They don't realize, and I've said this so many times over the past couple days, that if you really would trade your life for anybody else's life out there, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it. If you really could look at somebody and say, I want his life, you would never do it. For whatever reason, there's not one person who would do it. One guy told me he would. Okay, so why not?
I like that guy's life. I don't mind.
Everybody has these problems, and you don't realize them. You live with them because they're your problems, but everybody else, nobody else wants to live with your problems. That's the shot behind, where Tanchum says, near above 20 amos is possible, a boar rake in Bomayim. The Peshapi, I'm putting it above 20 amos because the boar is rake. There's no water inside. Okay.
Two questions.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, just on that, Rashi, a boar rake in Bomayim, but
Nachashim Akrabim.
Okay. I've always had this problem. Habor reik ein bo mayim. So the Torah is telling you two things. One is telling you that it's empty, and it's telling you that there's no water.
Right.
So if Rashi is explaining that reik means, but hey, the pit may not have water, but can't you read the Rashi by saying, oh, it could not have nechashim v'akrabim? That's why the Torah is telling you habor reik. Not only is it reik of nechashim v'akrabim, it's also reik because it doesn't have water. Why do we have to say the pshat is that if you look at Rashi, and you take
Rashi's lashon is taken from the Gemara, and the Gemara was clearly saying it is habor reik. If it's reik, why do I have to tell you ein bo mayim? And the answer is because ein bo mayim, but there was nechashim v'akrabim.
And that's why it's telling you it's reik.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's telling you it's reik. I don't know if you can take it back that far. That's like a nice addition, but you don't need it.
You're trying to learn from that.
Rake ein bo, in other words, why do you say a bore ein bo mayim? That's part of the whole question. Because if you said a bore ein bo mayim, you just say it's empty. There's no water inside. Saying a bore rake means, oh, you already know it's empty. So saying ein bo mayim means, oh, there's no water, but there is something else. By the way, the next pasuk says v'yashvu le'echol. They darshan for that v'yesh bo le'echol. There is something inside there which eats, which is snakes and scorpions. That's what they darshan out from. I realize scorpions don't eat.
Those things didn't affect him.
But yeah. Yes, that's the point.
The second point is, in this week's parsha, Yosef is also taken out of a boar.
A different type of boar. A very, very different type of boar. Because this boar was his boar. It had steps leading up to it. That's why you read Suhu. They ran him out. Not that they pulled him out, like they had to do with Vayaluhu, when they pulled him out in order to sell him. This is why you read Suhu. They ran him up the boar.
Is there any connection between the boars?
No. No. Although,
Does it say in last week's parsha, the end, that he was put in a boar? Didn't it say last week's parsha he was put in jail? And now
yes.
All of a sudden they're taking them out.
Yes,
of the
but
boar.
It's a different type of a boar, a completely different type of boar. This boar you could get out of. It's just there's a locked door in front of you. There's steps leading you out, but there's a door in front of you. The other boar was just a big
boar
pit.
In the prison, right?
It was a boar of the prison. The prison
it's
was
kind of like
a big
they put
boar.
Him in the hole, basically.
Yeah, in the hole.
It's like he was in the prison.
Is there a connection? Not that I know of offhand. I'm sure there is. There always is. For sure there is. Okay. Miketz is always on Chanukah. The pshat is, it's pure choshech with the Yavanim. You can't see anything. Everybody says choshech, and the Yavanim, they brought about the light, and that's all menorah and everything. You can't see Hashem directly. The Yavanim, HaKadosh Baruch, whose name is nowhere. Nowhere. You don't see Hashem's name once until Yeshuascha Kivisi Hashem. For your salvation, I hope, O God, and Parshas Vayechi. Because the HaKadosh Baruch is not around. It's Golos and everything. Yosef thought that was pshat. We asked the Sar Mashkin, yeah.
God's name is not where?
Not anywhere. Throughout Parshas Mikids and most of Vayeshev.
Doesn't it say that Eshelokim, he says that Hashem is going to be the one that's going to be answering the dream?
Eshelokim Yirach, Hashem's name, of Yudke Vavke, the real name of Rachamim and everything. There might, I think in Elokim, it's only as an adjective as opposed to where's, you know, there is a God, you know? But it doesn't say anything. What?
It's din.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I mean, for sure, he does say, or where is it? He said, Vineshav Shabalim, he quotes down the whole dream, and he says,
that's when Yosef says,
and he says, I'm not going to do it. Where is it? Asher Elokim Osa Hira as Paro. This is what God is going to do that he showed to Paro. Right, 100% that is true. Right, Biladai Elohim Yana Shlom Paro. So he does say the word Elokim, but he does not say the word Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is the Rachamim. Why not? Because it's Golos. Golos. And because it's Golos, he thinks to himself, and it's not a bad thought. He asked the Sar Mashkin for help. Because what did he think? He had a Svara. His Svara was, this is altogether, it's mentioned by the Ben Ish Chai. The Pshat was, he thinks to himself that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not here. I can't ask him for any help. There's no way that I could daven for him to answer me. If he's going to answer me, it's going to be through my Hishtaglus. And the answer is going to be that my davening will help that person through my Hishtaglus, because I told him to go help me. That person will now go up to Paro and ask everything for me. But it's not that God is going to put a thought into Paro's head, oh, let's take Yosef out of the boar. That's what he's thinking, because his Golus has got to be done in a backhanded fashion. That's what he thought he was going to have to do. And that's why I went to the Sar Mashkin. But why is that bad? That's a good thing. I mean, the fact is, that's the way we do act nowadays. We don't straight up go to a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You go to a doctor, right? If you're sick, you end up going to a doctor. You don't just say, like, oh, God should heal me. A guy told me today, he said that, he said, he doesn't understand. He was davening mincha, and as he was davening mincha, the flight made a last call for, you know, last call for whatever, and he was supposed to go on, and all of a sudden, the plane left without him. And he's like, why? I was in the middle of mincha. How come a HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't, like, save the plane for me or hold the plane back for a minute for me?
Well, he's an idiot.
It's like, well, why? Why is an idiot? Why?
He should have gone on when he had a chance and then done mincha on the plane.
It's a famous story where a HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, like, listen, you know, I gave you the chance. You have to go on. So he thought, like, okay, a crazy miracle is going to happen for me. You can't expect a crazy miracle to happen for you. Who are you to expect this miracle to happen for you? Yosef and Tzadik thought just that. Who am I to expect this crazy thing to happen? So he sold the Sar Mashkim. However, there's a big difference between the two. You don't think Hashem is behind the scenes, but obviously Hashem is behind the scenes. You don't think the Sar Mashkim is going to go up to everybody and tell them what happened inside jail? You don't think he's going to say, I saw a dream that was prophesying that I was going to leave jail? And they'll say, how do you know it was prophesying? Well, there was this guy down there who told me the translation of the dream. And everybody will have in their heads, oh, there's a crazy dream interpreter. You don't think that would have happened? Now, obviously, maybe it wouldn't have happened the exact same way that it happened now, which Paro will find out. But eventually, people will find out this guy's a dream interpreter. That's not going to happen any other way. Ben Ish Chai says his fault was he knew that he had to be in jail for 10 years because the 10 drops of Shechva Zera L'Batala, each one that came from each one of his fingers. Each one of his fingers. When he was about to be with Eshes Potiphar, he ran and stuck his fingers in the ground. And I'm not so sure exactly how this is possible, but there was 10 drops of Shechva Zera L'Batala that came out from those fingers and landed inside the ground. Those 10 fingers of Shechva Zera L'Batala caused the 10 years of him in jail. As soon as those 10 years were up, he sat there and he said, okay, my 10 years are up. My time is up. My official time for being there is up. Now I've got 2 more years. There's no reason to go to the Sar Mashkin. You don't think HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to let the Sar Mashkin? This is a natural thing. The Sar Mashkin is going to get out. Paro, you'll never believe what just happened. I had a crazy dream. This guy interpreted my dream. You don't think he would say that? But he didn't. By Yishkacheyu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that he would forget because Yosef HaTzadik went too far with his little Ishtadlus. But yeah.
In the end of the day, the way it worked out was the best way for it to work out.
Of course. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always makes sure. But we don't know if there would have been another best way for it to work out. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu redid the entire plan because Yosef HaTzadik asked for Ishtadlus. So all of a sudden, okay, it's a brand new plan in which this is the best way for it to work out. there could have been a much better way 2 years ago, or a better way, another better way 2 years ago. Now the Marsha explains about dreams. It's strange. I don't have a really good answer for this, but there's a dream throughout the past three parshias. We never see dreams before, and all of a sudden we got the dream of Yosef, we got the dreams of the Sarah Mashkin and the Sarah Ofen, and the dreams of Paro. And by the way, they're all doubles. All two of Yosef, Sarah Mashkin and Sarah Ofen, two of Paro. They're in twos. Why does it have to be two? So I don't have a really good answer for that. I have the haskala to it, but there's a crazy Marsha. Marsha says he goes on a day at the night. There's three different times of the night. The first time is where the donkey brays. The donkey brays late at night. The second part is where the dogs are barking. That's the middle of the night. And the third time is when the kids are crying out for their mothers. The mothers start to nurse them, and they talk it over with their husbands. They talk something over with their husbands. Those are the three times of the night. Each stands for 4 hours of the 12-hour night, 4 hours of the donkey, 4 hours of the dog, and 4 hours of the mother talking to his baby. So Marsha says it refers to the three different dreams that a person can have. If you have a dream in the first third of the night, it's not a real dream. It's based on the work that you had that day. It's based on something that you might have seen that day, something on that. That's the donkey brain. The donkey, which is the worker, made you see something. If you have it in the middle third of the night, that's going to be a dog dream, which means it's full of tumah. Full of tumah because the dog is the sign of the sultan, the signs of the shadim, and the mazik on the other side, the sitra achra they call it. That's what the dogs are doing, and that's supposed to be a dream. That's supposed to be a bad dream. And then the last third of the night is supposed to be from the malach. If you have a dream in the last third of the night, if you wake up early in the morning and you see it's 5 o'clock in the morning and you see that you just had a crazy dream, that's straight up from the malach. If you sleep during the day, it automatically reverts back to the sultan. So the dreams that we have when we wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:45 in the morning, those dreams, when we wake up and we see them, they're not necessarily from malach. Because you wake up before dawn and it's in that last third of the night and you know that dream happened then, it could be from the malachim according to the Marsha. When did Paro have these dreams? Paro had these dreams, said the Marsha, in the middle of the night. Because he was full of the klavim soakim, full of the kelev that was crying out for him, telling him all the craziest things over here. And thus, Satan wants to help out his followers. This dream was a true dream, but it wasn't given to him by the malachim, it was given to him by the Satan. Satan helps out kings. Kings get crazy dreams for that reason. I mean, that's the whole thing about this chalom being the Bamta Laila. You know what my proof is? Because they asked this question, they tell me the mass. Hine sheva parus, hine mini or olos sheva parus, yefos mare, ubrios baser, vaterna bahu. It's talking about seven cows. Cows are kosher. How could a tahor, kosher things, be in a tame guy's dream? How could he have that? Strange question, right? You can't have tahor things in a tame person's dream, the same way that a tahor person will not dream of something tame.
Could you explain something like this? I think it must have been last year about everything, or maybe it's some of the, everything that's on the outside is the flip side, is in the water.
The water. Very good. There's always something. There's an animal on land that corresponds to an animal at sea. We don't know what they are, unfortunately. There's a mouse, there's a sea mouse. There's a horse, there's a sea horse. There's a cow, there's a sea cow. Whatever is kosher on land is not kosher in the sea. Whatever is not kosher on land is kosher in the sea. So therefore, these paros, where were they coming out from? Olos mina yaor. They came out from the river, which means they were automatically tummy. They get from the kisa, they get that from the kisa kavod. The kisa kavod is supposed to have a nesher and an aryeh on it. A nesher and an aryeh, an eagle and a lion. The question they ask is, an eagle and a lion are not kosher. What would they be doing in the kisa kavod? Why are they up there? And they answer, because it's in Shemayim. In Shemayim, it's full of water up there. If it's full of water up there, then that means that these are lions and eagles from the water, which are kosher animals. And then they ask, but wait, there's a shore on the kisa kavod. So the shore should be a not kosher shore. How could that be? They answer, that's why it was taken off. The shore was midas adin. It's a sign of the satan. It had to be taken off, and Abraham Avinu changed it to a kruv, to one of the kruv. That's why it had to be taken off, because the shore could not remain up there because it was tame.
Yeah, then what about the tame oxen?
The what?
The tame ones that came out of the sea.
These are tame oxen because they appeared in Paro's dream. That's okay.
The other ones would be tahor then.
No, which ones? The skinny ones?
Yeah.
No, they're still coming from the sea. They all came from the sea. They're all going to be tame. Everything here is going to be tame. And that's why it's perfectly fine. That's why it was mina yor. There were sea cows, manatees, they call them. Manatees, I guess you could call them. Manatees interstellar sea cow. You might have heard of it. It went extinct in 1830. I know, seahorses. You have to say, like, they're not kosher. I don't know. I don't know what the equivalent of a horse is in the sea. I don't know what equivalent of anything is. They say that a sea mouse is a sea lion. Sea lions look like huge mice that live in the sea. But, I mean, we're not only talking about fish. Yeah, obviously they're both not kosher, so how does it work? Don't know. I honestly don't know. But the stopover says... What?
Catfish.
Catfish are also not kosher, so they can't be. That can't be it. A catfish doesn't really look like a cat.
It's got a whisker.
Yeah, it's got a whisker. You know, that's all it is. Like, they don't really look like cats. There is an animal that's going to be cut. It's going to be like a cat. It's
kosher.
Yeah. Yeah, a taller animal can only be kosher. Camels are close. Pigs are close. Rabbits are close. And hyraxes are close because they do one of the two, but they're not close enough. It's not close enough. All right, the Chasam Sofer says dreams, all dreams are very, very similar. You know what happens? You go up to Shemayim and you're either with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Malachim or you're with the Satan. But obviously, everything up there is spiritual. They tell you things of what's going to happen in the future, what's going to happen this upcoming day, what you're looking forward to. Your Neshama sometimes wants to give you a sign, wants to give you a warning before it happens, to tell you, watch out, this is going to happen. So he'll come back to you and he'll try to show to you what he saw in Shemayim. The problem is that he saw it spiritually. How do you translate something spiritual into something physical? How does that happen? So he has certain signs. And Elon, for example, is a Talmud Chacham, is a yeshiva. A shore refers to a Talmud Chacham. There are certain things that he can show you that will represent certain ideas or certain things. But that's the reason why your dreams are so strange. They're all Ramazan. If you sat down and you thought about it, you'd figure out that which he was trying to do. So the basic idea is Paro saw a real dream. That's why it says Paro Cholin. He was dreaming. Not just on his own. And it was Cholin without a vav, which means it was a dream of Tumah. But it was a real dream, an absolute real dream in which it wasn't just Stam. It wasn't just Stam where he was just having a dream and going to sleep or whatever it was. He was really dreaming and really doing something that was absolutely, it was a real thing. You understand what Yaziel said? The Khartoumim weren't allowed to understand what was going on here. But think about it. Wouldn't you figure this out in a second? Wheat is the staple of the food in Mitzrayim. The Nile River is what gives the food to all of Mitzrayim. They don't have rain in Mitzrayim. It all comes from the Nile River, from tributaries in the Nile River. Cows and wheat are their two staples of food. The meat they get from cows because the sheep and the goats were gods, and the wheat was something that they used for bread. The two staples of food on the Nile River, which was the water source that gave them all the food in the world. Wouldn't you think you'd go into a famine? And yet they went ahead and they translated it to seven daughters or seven aparkios, seven cities that were going to be killed, or seven daughters that were going to be destroyed. Why would Rashi even go into such a thing in Pasukas? The strangest thing, why would he tell us what the Khartoumim wanted to tell Paro? Who cares what they wanted to translate for Paro? This is very, very strange. But the idea is, it's supposed to be very, very pashut. Yalka Ruvini says, the Satan was trying to hint to him two things at once. He was trying to show him about the famine. He knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would only let the famine be known through Yosef Atzadik. So he tried doing the dream in a way that would represent something else as well. That the Satan was going to grab a hold of seven Jews, seven huge Jews, and give them over something that was Misitra de Tumah, the side of Tumah. For example, Moshe Rabbeinu. I'll give you the seven people, actually. Moshe Rabbeinu was one of them. Start with Yehuda. Yehuda was one of them. Then comes Yosef. Then comes Moshe Rabbeinu. Then comes Eliezer, the son of Aaron. Then comes Yoshua, Shimshon, and Boaz. All seven of these people were unbelievably high people, leaders of Klal Yisrael. Each one of them married a Gioras, and not necessarily in a good way. Yehuda we know with Tamar. Yosef we know with Asnas. We don't know what Asnas is. Moshe Rabbeinu with Sipora. After Moshe was Eliezer. Eliezer married another daughter of Yisrael. We also have Yoshua. Yoshua married Rachav Azona. Shimshon married, as we know, all the Plishti women. And Boaz married Rus. All of them married Giorsim. The Satan thought that he was going to grab a hold of each one of these leaders and bring up a little bit of Tumah inside there. Little did he know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was behind it the entire way through and knew what he was going to do and made sure that those people would be tremendous neshamas that they were bringing back into Klal Yisrael. Enough so that they weren't affected by the woman. The women were affected by them. And they only grew up in stature and not anything lower. But that's what they saw when they saw the whole dream and they told it to Paro. They told him an actual translation of the dream. It's just that Paro didn't accept it. And that answers another question. We know that Kol HaChalomos Holchen Achar HaPeh. If you translate a dream, it goes after what you say it is. So that's it. That's all you have to do. Now what?
Now what you believe. It's what you speak out.
It's what you speak out.
But I guess Paro's pregnant. What does that have to do with him?
What does that have to do with him? What does that have to do with Paro? In other words, the what's it called? The seven daughters and everything.
Right.
What does that have to do with him? Paro is the leader of Tuma. When we get into his name later on and what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing with Paro, the absolute leader of Tuma. But aside from the fact that he was an Amma tall and he had an Amma long beard and he had the Amma that was an Amma, you know, aside from all that, he was the king of Tuma. And the Satan knew that. And he allowed him to be the king of Tuma and gave him all the information that he needed to know in order to bring about certain Zivugim of Tuma. Those Zivugim of Tuma somehow would cause those women or those men of the Jews to be attracted to these women of Tuma. There's something going on here behind the scenes in which Paro is in charge. Paro does a lot of crazy things. It's part of his Kisha. Oh yeah. Moed Katan Yud Chasim Ad Aleph. He was an Amma tall, he had an Amma long beard, and his area was an Amma long. The king of Znus. The king of Znus in all of Mitzrayim.
What does a beard have to do with anything?
Kisha. Explain, you can only do Kisha with beards. But yeah.
At that time,
yeah. He did, but he didn't know he was. He always had connections with the Jews. He had no idea what he was doing though. He had no shaykhis to what he was doing. All he knew was he was connecting certain parts of Tuma. Satan was using him to do certain things. He didn't see it as a translation to his dream. You know, sometimes you hear something and you're like, that's okay, but that's not really it. This is what Paro thought. He's like, it's there, it's close, but it's not it. There's something missing. I'm sorry?
Why would someone want a midget to be their king?
This guy was the king of Kishuv and the king of Znus.
He can levitate.
There's a place of absolute Kishuv and absolute Znus. This is like a massive, massive Times Square of 1990. You know, like that's just what it was. Like crazy things going on at all times, and Paro was just the man. He was the man. He might have been an Amma tall, but they were all like, this guy's rocking. This guy's the absolute rocker. That's what they thought. But why doesn't call it Lomos Olchan Achar Pad? This is why. Because Paro didn't feel, says the Moshe of Zakanim, he wasn't happy with the pshat given. This is true. Whenever you hear a pshat given to your dream, if you're not happy with that pshat, that's not the pshat that's going to come out from the dream. So some people, you'll hear them, they have a dream, and they'll say like, oh, translate that as Mashiach's coming. We'll translate it like that. If you're not happy with that translation, that won't be the translation of the dream. That won't work. You have to redo it until you find out the real translation of the dream.
What about the baker?
The baker? The baker thought it was great. The baker thought that was the real translation of the dream.
Not the baker.
He realized.
The guy who was killed.
No, the baker. The baker, the Sara Ofen, really thought that was the pshat beyond the dream.
And he was happy with that pshat that he's
not happy.
Killed?
Not happy. But it was a realization. This is what has to be. You know, obviously, he's sitting there like, oh, you're saying, scream. Man or whatever it is, you know, but he realized that this is, and this has to be the shot over here. It's a crazy dream.
Twice.
Why?
Because the first time you hear it, it may not click. The second time you have the dream, that's what it bothers you. The same thing with Yosef. It didn't click for the brothers until the second dream. That's why the second dream had to happen.
Only once they heard that. That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea at all.
That's because they didn't care about the materialistic thing. That's why the second dream was about spiritual.
What do you mean? The second dream of Yosef, of the stars and everything. That could be 100% true, but he had to feel like he was in the dream. He had to feel something. But Yosef's dreams were also a little bit different. They stood for two different times. But I will give you Al-Sfasi Or. They were standing on the banks of the river. Why was it important to know such a thing? So here's where the Midrashim come in. Al-Sfasi Or, because in Mitzrayim there is no such thing as rain. Rain does not fall down in Mitzrayim. What happens is that the river overflows and the river gives them everything that they need throughout Mitzrayim. But Egypt itself does nothing with rain. Has absolutely nothing to do with rain. But if the river is always there, the river is not going to dry up, then how is there going to be a famine? And maybe this is the reason why the Khartoum had a problem with translating it into a famine. If the cows are standing in the river, then how could there be a famine? The answer is there's a quick answer that's answered by the Rishonim. The Rush, I think, says it. If they're standing in the river, that means what? There's no river. Because they're standing in the river. So that if they're coming out of the river, that means there's nothing for them to go. It's a very low river, so it must be that there's a famine. That's what they say. But here it says Al-Sfasior on the banks of the river. So what does that mean? So they say, you're right, the river's there. There's three crazy things that happened in this famine.
You see the river flooded the entire place. A famine doesn't necessarily mean there's no wheat.
It destroyed everything. I hear you, but Paro was standing on the banks of the river. He was definitely standing there and watching it happen. He was standing Ali Or. That's a good call. On the river.
Maybe because it was at one point it was a river and then depleted so much that now he's on the banks.
nice. You can translate it that way. I don't mind. Yeah, I don't mind saying it that way. But here we go. We have three. The Or HaChaim says the craziest nace of all this was they ate, but yet they were still hungry. During the famine, it wasn't a natural famine in which they had food. They were able to keep some food, but they were always hungry. Always hungry. No matter what they ate, no matter how much they ate, no matter how much they had, they kept eating and eating and eating, and they weren't hungry. Yeah, we're talking about like a 17-year-old guy. A 17-year-old guy who has breakfast in the morning. They just kept eating and eating and eating, and they just kept being hungry. There was no way for them to fill themselves up. There was no way for them to fill themselves up. That was the unnatural part of the famine, number one. Number two, there's a medrash that the Miyam Lois quotes down that everything, as they were holding it in their hands, it immediately rotted. It rotted while they were holding it. They were holding a piece of bread, and all of a sudden, mold started appearing on it. Mold started appearing, and all of a sudden, it just became rotting, and there's worms all over and everything like that. It just happened from the bread that they were holding in their hands. They're sitting like, what in the world just happened? It was like a fast forward that it just all of a sudden turned into rot. Number three, the Miyam Lois, this is the craziest one. The food shrunk while they were eating it. So as they were eating it, you know, something like a steak. You put a steak on the barbecue, and all of a sudden, it shrinks a little bit. All of a sudden, it shrunk. So they weren't able to eat anything. So they all saw this, and they all immediately, what do you think? You're sitting in Mitzrayim, and these crazy things are happening, and you know this new guy who now became the second in command to the king is the guy who predicted all this to happen. What's the first thing you're going to think?
He did it.
Without question, he did it. Yosef did it, and he did it through Kishuv. They ran to Yosef, and they said, how are we supposed to stop this? What do you want us to do to stop it? So Yosef said the craziest thing that they've ever heard in Pasuk Nun Hey.
I thought you said Kishuv doesn't happen because over water.
Normally, Kishuv has no effect on water, but there are certain types of Kishuv that do. Normal Kishuv does not. Wait, but we'll see that certain things do.
They were saying the famine, is it shrunk? Or there was a famine plus this?
During the famine. This is what happened during the famine. This is why the famine was so crazy. But here we go. They said, they all ran to Yosef, and Yosef told them what? All right, guys, get bris milas. If you get a bris milah, then I'll make sure that all the food is going to be handed out and everything's going to be okay. But if you don't get bris milas, you're not getting any food from me. They ran to Paro. They're like, Paro, what in the world is going on here? This guy, without a doubt, is a machashev, and he's making us get bris milas. What in the world is up with this? We're not destroying ourselves just because this guy says so. Yosef had a dream over here, by the way, and his dream was that he wanted to make all Balei Tshuva. He wanted Mitzrayim to improve upon themselves. He knew that the problem was Arias. So he thought to himself that he could improve them and give them bris milas and work on their arayas, because the Rambam says that you can improve on yourself and you won't be so into arayas if you have a bris milah. If you could do that for them, then all of a sudden everything will be good and they'll become Jewish. And the Shvatim wouldn't be in a hostile place. They'll be in a non-hostile place. The problem was that the Mitzrayim never kept it up. They were very good to the Jews for almost 80 years. But after Yosef passed away and the Jews didn't keep it up, they didn't keep up the idea of keep giving them bris milas. All of a sudden they went off. Even the Jews themselves stopped giving themselves bris milas. And then the problem started happening because they started getting into a rise, the Mitzrayim did, and then they realized we're different from the Jews, and they started keeping them away from them, not going anywhere near them whatsoever. So either way, so they went to Paro, who's the king Mechashef, as we know from Moed Katan. But Paro said to them, look, I can't do anything. I've been doing crazy amounts of Kishuv now, trying to get the food back, and I can't do anything over there. So you have to do Mila, and everything will work out because of that. But Yaakov Avinu had grain. Why did Yaakov Avinu have grain? It was such crazy things that were happening. How was Yaakov Avinu able to have the grain? What did he do?
He had bris milah.
For sure, but the bris milah didn't exactly work for the Mitzrayim. So what could he have done over here? They did come down, but at first he says, "Lama tisra, why do you show yourselves as if you're not hungry, as if you have enough food?" So Yaakov Avinu, you don't want Esav and everybody being jealous of us and thinking that we have food. Forget about it. Just go down to Mitzrayim and ask for food, even though we don't really need it. That's why Yosef wasn't so worried about them, because remember in the dream, he saw them as stalks. The stalks were weak. They were bowing down to Yosef, who was a straight stalk in the middle. But they still had wheat. There were still stalks of wheat. There was still something there. That's how he knew that it wasn't an emergency and he wasn't going to send them down immediately, put them in jail for a little bit and whatever. So he knew there had to be some food there. Regardless, so what happened with this thing with Yaakov Avinu? Yaakov Avinu, remember, from the bracha of Yitzchak, had a bracha of Tal HaShemayim. Yitain lecha mitala shemayim u'mishmani ha'aretz. Because of that bracha of Tal HaShemayim, he was going to going to get unnatural growth of grain and growth of food, even where he was in Eretz Canaan, even though there was no rain and even though there were no rivers overflowing, there was nothing. He had the Tal HaShemayim that was going to work for him. But he always told Esav that the bracha wasn't Miskayim. If the bracha wasn't Miskayim, then everybody had a big question. Esav would look over at Yaakov and would say, well, what's going on, Yaakov? You know, I thought you said the bracha wasn't Miskayim. And they would immediately try to fight Yaakov. Yaakov didn't want it to make it look like he had that bracha from Yitzchak Avinu. So he said, guys, Lamed Yisrael, why do you show yourselves this way in front of Bnei Esav? Go down to Mitzrayim so they think that the bracha of Yitzchak wasn't Miskayim. That his bracha wasn't really Miskayim. All right, we got in Pasuk Mem Beis. Yeah. Go ahead.
Besides Yaakov's, besides Yosef interpreting the dream, the reason why Yosef is a big star is because Yosef comes up with this novel idea of storing food and then giving food on the time of the famine. So the point of Yosef was to give out food on the time of the famine. We were going to have the, in a sense, nullifying the famine. The famine was going to be a
except for the fact that Yosef had just become extremely powerful. And once you become extremely powerful like that, he could do anything. And nobody was going to be able to stop him. Who's going to stop him? The guards? The guards were in charge of the grain. Those guys are all happy. They're fine because they're like, okay, we got grain for ourselves. Yosef had a whole army of people who had food. What were they going to do? They're going to start a revolt against Yosef? They could have. Till Paro told them, guys, just do it anyway. I'm not in the mood to start a revolt. The only way we're going to get the food is to force Yosef and Yosef has to give something to us. He's a smart man. God is with him. There's something with this guy. Ignore everything else and just get the bris milos. Whatever this guy says, go ahead and do. That has to be the answer to your question. You're right that that was part of the stipulation that he's supposed to give out food. But he became powerful enough that he can demand certain things from everybody and nobody can go against that. That happened with Paro itself, by the way. Paro himself, you know how he became Paro? He's not a simple guy. Rei Kayon was a guy from Babylonia. He lived in Babel. He decided he wasn't doing so well for himself in Babel, so he decided to go down to Mitzrayim where there was a lot of opportunity.
The cemetery, right?
He goes down to the cemetery, so he goes down to Mitzrayim, and he goes and checks out the land, and he asks people around, what do you guys do? And they told him, we sell vegetables in the street, in the shuk. So he goes, he picks some vegetables, and he brings them to the shuk, and he starts to sell them. But he doesn't know the ways of the land, and everybody's cheating him, doing this, whatever it is, and he ends up making absolutely no money. He's left with nothing at the very end of the day. That night he goes to sleep and he thinks of a tremendous idea. So the next morning Rei Kayon gets up and he goes to the cemetery. He hires 150 strong men and tells the 150 strong men surround the cemetery, surround the entire place. If anybody comes inside and tries to bury their dead, demand that they pay a tax of 100 gold pieces or else they can't go in. And it's by order of the king. I forgot to mention that Rei Kayon tried to go see the king of Mitzrayim, but the king of Mitzrayim was not available. The king of Mitzrayim was only available one day a year. One day a year he came down to the people and talked to the people. The rest of the days he was up in his palace far, far away and he wasn't able to talk to them. So because Rei Kayon knew this, he knew the king wasn't around, he said, this is a demand from the king. This is what the king says. And he hired his 150 hired goons. He sat them outside of the cemetery, and whenever anybody came by, they had to pay 100 gold pieces in order to get inside. Obviously, it took a long time for people to realize that this guy was faking it. So finally, the real guy who was in charge came back, the king came back, and as they came to him, all the guys came up to him and said, what do you make this tax for 100 gold pieces for? The king said, what are you talking about? I never made such a tax. They told him about Rei Kayon, and the king says, oh, we're going to chop off his head right now. So he sends for Rei Kayon. Rei Kayon sent 100 children bearing gifts of gold for the king of Mitzrayim, and then afterward comes along on a big white horse looking all majestic and looking very, very nice. Rei Kayon is so impressed by him, he listens to what he has to say, and Rei Kayon said, I didn't mean to do it. He's a car salesman, you know. Oh, I didn't mean to do it. It's this, that, whatever. He goes ahead. Eventually, the king says, look, you're a very impressive person. How about you become king in my place for 364 days a year? The 365th day, I'll come back and everything's good. And because you made everybody pay you to go inside the base, the base akvaros, we'll call you Paro. Paro will be your name. And however that translates into the Egyptian word, paying in Egyptian is Paro in Hebrew. That became...
Where's Mishnah says?
What? Oh, this Mishnah is quoted down by Sidra Doros, the Sefer Yashar. It's quoted down by the Miamloes. It says it all over the place. So eventually, it took them about 2 years to start a revolt, and eventually they destroyed the king, and Paro became king of all Mitzrayim. And from then on, because of that original idea, he made everybody who was king after him be known as the name of Paro. Everybody had to be known by that name. And if you weren't known by that name, you wouldn't be king of Mitzrayim. That's how Paro became this person. So you can see this sort of a thing, where somebody all of a sudden usurps the throne, takes the power away. Paro's afraid of that, but he sees that Yosef is not ambitious enough to take the whole kingdom. He just wants to be in charge of the grain. Says Paro, I don't want to start a revolt. What if Yosef wins? I'm going to lose my position. He says, I'm not going to do it. Doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be.
That Paro was the one that Yosef was.
Could be. Right. We don't know how long Paro lives.
Okay.
It could be that Paro is the same Paro all the way through. Most probably not. According to historical findings, it's not. But we can definitely say there is an opinion that does say that one Paro lived the entire time. Big day sheish. I happen to love this little thing. Pasuk mem aleph. Pasuk mem beis. I'm sorry. Yosef paros tabato me'al yado. He took off his ring from on his finger. Ve'itin osal yad Yosef. And he put it on the hand of Yosef. Ba'yalbish oso big day sheish. He made him wear clothing of linen. Ba'yasim revida zov al tzavaro. And then he put a big gold chain. He gave him some bling on his neck. And he let him sit there with. He had the bling. He had that little. I'm sure it was a Jewish star or something right around his neck that went all around his neck and everything. So what's going on here? What's with the big day sheish? Why do you need that? Yalgruvin and a bear basada both say the exact same thing. Paro knew a certain secret that not too many people knew. The idea was that anybody who dies wearing all linen clothing, and this is why we wear all linen clothing, why we wear tachrichim that are made just of linen and nothing else. Anybody who dies wearing all linen, even in chutzlar, it's kateger nasalo saneger. Your accusers become your defendants. And all of a sudden, shamayim, you'll be able to go straight up to shamayim because nothing bad will happen to you. You'll be able to do that if you're wearing this proper linen clothing. But it can't have any other levush with it. It can't have any other string of any other thing with it. It has to be pure linen all the way through. And if you're wearing that, you go straight up to Shemayim. It's a skua. A father with kids who have a chazaka to die. He has three kids who died, or two kids that died. By the third child, he should wrap the child all in linen clothing. And then he won't die. There is no way the kid is going to die.
Well, they used to bury them in other material.
The mummies?
That's only the mummies?
The Jews. Hold on. The Jews? What do you mean? The linen?
That's only because people would just leave their dead because they didn't want to spend so much money.
Hold on. Paro was the greatest machashev of all time. Greatest machashev that has lived, for sure, in that time. He figured that out. And he was able to protect himself from all types of kishuf and all types of shadim and anything else that was out there by wearing this linen clothing. It was an automatic protection that made sure that nobody was going to touch him. Because whenever anybody did any kishuf on him, he had his linen clothing, in which it bounced right back off. Thus, by wearing the linen clothing, he had no problems whatsoever, no ayin haras, no kishuf, nothing. And he knew that nobody else would be able to figure this out. Nobody did figure this out. Nobody knew why their magic wasn't working on Paro. But for some reason, they thought Paro has this crazy amount of magic, more than anybody else, and thus Paro has this thing. Nobody realized that it was just the linen clothing. When Yosef became leader, he also gave him linen clothing. He gave him pure linen clothing. But he wanted to be mevatel. He put a revita zov on top of his chest. Yosef HaTzadik knew this from another way. He knew it from a kadosh source. Because the Kohen Gadol, when he goes lifnei v'lifnim on Yom Kippur, what does he wear? Goes to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. What does he wear? Big day pishtar. Only linen, nothing else. He's got aksones. He's got the belt. He's got... Exactly, no big days of. He's got the ksonis, he's got the belt, he's got the mechnasayim, and he's got the hat. All of them are pure linen. He realized that from the big day sheish that there is a pshat.
Some of it is
what?
The hat doesn't have kodesh lashem on it or whatever?
No tzitz. Normally the Kohen Gadol would wear that, but in this case he didn't. In this stuff, it's only big day sheish. In this stuff itself, it's only big day sheish. And he realized that sewed from the big day Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. So he accepted it from Paro and accepted it, and he knew that the Revit Azel was to me. Battle it. it. So what he did was he made sure that the Ravid Azov wouldn't come in between the Pishtan and his skin. He wore it on the outside so that it wouldn't affect anything to do with his clothing. He made sure that the string hit the outside of his clothing, and he made sure that the actual metal, I guess you could say, whatever itself, whatever that thing was sitting all the way on the outside and wasn't inside the actual shirt itself. That's a tremendous amount. That's the Ravid Azov. That's the Ravid Azov. Beisnaker. Beisnaker. It happens to be there's crazy things about Beisnaker. How did Yosef hide himself from the brothers? You think he really hid himself from the brothers? You think he couldn't do it? You know Cinderella's in this parsha also, by the way. Cinderella? The whole parsha of Cinderella? It says in the next pasuk, it says, where is it? Vayitem lo asnas bas Potiphar kohen only isha. He gave him asnas, the daughter of Potiphar. Why asnas? Why did he give him asnas? It's unbelievable, my son. Asnas had a crazy amount. He had a gold plate that hit around that she had around her neck. Why? Because Asnas was originally Dinah and Shechem's daughter. Dinah and Shechem's daughter. Dinah was pregnant from the relationship with Shechem. She became pregnant. She was able to have a daughter, and that daughter's name was Asnas. But none of the Shvatim wanted to keep her around. They despised her. They thought she was the daughter of something dirty. So they said, we're getting rid of her completely. But Yaakov even said, no, I don't want to get rid of her completely. What we'll do is, we'll hide her, and if somebody picks her up, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants her to live. But he put a gold plate around her neck and wrote in Lashon HaKodesh, this person's name is Asnas, the granddaughter of Yaakov Avinu. If anybody finds her, she can only marry a Jewish man. They put that in a gold plate that went around her neck, and then they put him down under a tree. Potiphar, on one of his trips to Eretz Canaan, which we can talk about another time, why Potiphar had to go to Eretz Canaan, but there were people in Eretz Canaan that were in charge of the economy of Egypt. So when at his trips back and forth from Eretz Canaan, one time saw Asnas under the tree, grabbed her, and took her home because Potiphar was not able to have any kids with his wife, Ishes Potiphar. Because of that, he was a Swiss. Some say he was a eunuch only later on, but either way, but he was a Swiss, he wasn't able to have any kids. He brought her back to his house for Ishes Potiphar. Ishes Potiphar raised her as if she was his daughter. So it was counted as if it was her very own daughter. But nobody was ever able to read the gold plate that was at her neck. When Yosef HaTzadik grew up in the house, she never thought to ask Yosef HaTzadik. Because she said to herself, who in the world is this guy? Or, there's another opinion, this is a crazy one, that Asnas was too young. I can't figure out the years exactly, but Asnas was the person who told everyone at the age of 11 months that Ishes Potiphar was the one who chased after Yosef and not vice versa. As an 11-month-old baby, she started speaking and telling everybody what had happened with Ishes Potiphar. Either way, Asnas was, for some reason, did not go to Yosef with the plate, not thinking that Yosef would be able to translate it. Yosef came out of jail 12 years later, and Asnas is sitting there knowing that there's nobody who can translate this plate. So everybody, as Yosef was traveling through the street, as they were introducing Safnas Paneach, this crazy guy who knew everything, everybody was throwing stuff at him, like flowers and everything, like names and addresses and phone numbers, whatever it was, like throwing stuff down there so that Yosef would be able to call them, whatever. Asnas took the golden plate and on the behest of Ishes Potiphar threw it down to Yosef HaTzadik. She said, this guy is going to know what it is. This guy is beyond what anybody comprehended. Ishes Potiphar knew this very, very well. And she knew that Yosef wouldn't be with her. But she still wanted him in the family and said, throw it down. For sure he knows what is going on and he'll find you. She threw down the golden plate. It landed in between Yosef's feet. He looked at it and realized there's a granddaughter of Yaakov Avinu around here. He didn't know the story, but he had to figure out what in the world she was doing here. So they searched throughout all of Mitzrayim looking for who's the person with the golden ticket, the person with the golden plate that fits around her neck. And they searched throughout Mitzrayim searching who this plate fits, and every girl said it was mine because Yosef HaTzadik was such a popular, beautiful guy. Everybody wanted to be married to Yosef HaTzadik. So every girl came up and they had to put it on and they had to figure out, and finally it fit upon Asnas' neck. And when that happened, when it fit upon Asnas' neck, Vayitein lo es Asnas bas Potiphar kohen on Leisha. They were able to give her over to Yosef HaTzadik as a wife. That's how they ended up finding Asnas.
Who says this?
What's Potiphar's name?
It's Leika.
How come they call her Potiphar?
No reason to know her name. Lots of people. We don't have to know their name. It's Leika. We don't need to know. You know, like Iris, the wife of Lot. We don't need to know Iris.
Where do you know gold plate from? Where's the gold plate from? Where does it say in the
Chumash? What does it say in the gold plate? It doesn't say the gold plate itself in the Chumash. It's the Midrashim. Something I made up. Nice, right? It's a good story. I think it's a great story. By the way, so now let's go on. We're gonna do one more.
Oh, actually, you said that was a Cinderella shot, right?
Yeah.
That's why it's Prince Charming and not King Charming.
What?
Oh,
is that the king?
Who says that?
Bravo. I don't know where I originally got that from. That's also around.
Why did she have a daughter, granddaughter?
Yakov.
Why? Who is she from?
She's Dina. Dina's daughter. Alright, last thing, but he's not here. How did he appear strange? So everybody says he had a beard. How does that work? The Baal Shem Tov says the best answer, that Yosef HaTzadik had a beard. But it's still very hard to understand. Just because he had a beard, all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, I can't recognize you. If anything, it looks more like Yaakov Avinu. So the Baal Shem Tov says an awesome line. Al Yidei Ha'ish Gabriel. By Snacker, is Al Yidei Ha'ish Gabriel. It's through Gabriel. That's why. What, they weren't able to recognize him because through the man Gabriel. He says the Gematria and everything, Al Yidei Ha'ish Gabriel is the same as by Snacker. That it was through the Ish Gabriel that nobody was able to recognize who this guy was. They weren't able to figure it out. That's number one.
What? What does it mean?
Gabriel hit him. Made it look like somebody else, but it did not look like Yosef HaTzadik. That's number one. Number two, the Ramban says it's the Egyptian masks. The Egyptians used to wear masks. We know that from all the hieroglyphics. They used to wear fox masks and everything. As soon as he saw the Shvatim come in, he put on a mask. They couldn't see his face. You don't think they would question? There's a white boy sitting on the throne of Mitzrayim. A city full of blacks. There's a white boy sitting on top of it. I realize that he was Mediterranean, but it still seems very strange. Chaim Minhagim says an awesome answer. Says they wouldn't look at his face because you're not supposed to look at the face of a Russia. So they stared right above his head. So they saw basically what he looked like, but they didn't want to look at him, so they looked right above his head.
Exactly.
They couldn't see anything. And even though he's supposed to look like Yaakov, they put three and three together. All of a sudden, they weren't able to recognize him. We'll talk about that a little bit more next week. Put it a little bit next week. The beard confused them. The beard confused them according to the Baal HaTorah. And the Ramban obviously argues, and the Talmid Chacham obviously argues, but through the Baal HaTorah we can understand. Idea Ish Gabriel, he was able to be confused. But what's the push-up shot behind that, Rashi? That a beard all of a sudden made them say, like, oh, I don't know who that is. I have no idea.
Like this entire thing. Like
It's going to be weird. What, you became a wolf?
What? I grew up here. Up here. You get all this?
All right, we'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos.